It was all a game. I'd have given him as many hours as he needed to explain everything to me.
Terrible negotiator, he said in a tisking tone. I would have taken 5 in a heartbeat. Good night, Em.
Em. A tentative smile curved my lips. I knew it would stay there for long hours afterward. He called me Em. On Thursday, I wore a white and gold floor-length dress to the exhibition, letting my thick wavy hair fall against my bare back. Brent rented me this dress. Rented, knowing how important the exhibition was for me. I couldn't sleep all night thinking about it. I tried to convince myself that it wouldn't be a big deal if no one bought my painting. It was going to be the first time a painting of mine would be on display and for sale in a gallery. A prestigious one, too. And I was with some of the best artists in New York. I should have just been happy with the fact that my painting was there, on the pristine white wall, looking at me, smiling at me, demanding my attention. I couldn't focus on anything but that painting. This afternoon, I'd spoken to my parents on the phone. They were already in Los Angeles and were living in an apartment in the same building as Vicious's penthouse in Los Feliz. I didn't want to know how many apartments the Hotholes had purchased over the years. Mama was still upset about what happened at the Spencer Mansion.
The worst part,
her voice shook again,
was that they think what caused the fire was our stove. I never leave my stove on. You know that. I check it 3 times before I go to bed every night. I'm telling you, Millie, it wasn't us.
I know, I said, brushing my hair in front of the mirror minutes before Brent picked me up. It wasn't you. I know that. But who knows? Maybe Josephine came in. Maybe one of the other people who worked for her. I left Vicious's name out for obvious reasons. Mama sighed.
What if they think we left it on purpose because she fired us?
Well, does anyone actually know that she fired you?
No.
Let's try and keep it that way, I said.
Your boyfriend said the same thing.
He's not my boyfriend. I was getting a little tired of repeating this to everybody, mainly because I wanted the opposite to be true.
Well, I have to go, Millie. Dean is taking us to buy some things for our apartment. It's really nice, big, but all the neighbors are so young. It's really weird to live here.
Dean was helping them out? I bit my inner cheek, but didn't say a word. That was the main thing about the Hotholes. They were such assholes, but deep down, they had great hearts. Enjoy, Mama. And now, here I was, living my dream, or what was supposed to be my dream. I stared at my painting again, clutching a tall glass of champagne and taking a deep breath. Rosie should have been here, but she'd taken a double shift at the cafe. She didn't want to do it, but she was covering for a sick coworker, and Rosie knew how it felt to get screwed over by illness. She didn't want the girl, Elle, to get in trouble. It was fine. I didn't need anyone to celebrate with me. Besides, I had Brent. A tall, beautiful woman in her early 50s approached me, wearing a black cocktail dress, a pearl necklace, and red lipstick. She smiled as she studied my painting on the wall.
Nature or love?
She mused. She just wanted to start a conversation and had no idea I was the ELB who'd signed the bottom of the painting. Emilia LeBlanc. Definitely love. I mean, isn't it obvious? I quirked an eyebrow. She laughed breathlessly, like what I'd said was utterly funny, and took a sip of her wine.
To you, maybe. Why do you think it's love?
Because the person who painted it is obviously in love with the subject.
Why not the other way around?
She turned to me with a cunning smile.
See his face?
She trailed her manicured finger close to the canvas.
He looks happy. Content. Maybe he is the one who's in love with the person who painted him. Or maybe they're in love with each other.
I blushed.
Perhaps. I'm Sandy Richards.
She extended her hand to me, and I shook it. Sandy looked like a rich woman, and not necessarily because of her outfit. There was an air about her.
In that sense, she reminded me of the man in my painting. Emilia LeBlanc.
I knew it.
Then she pointed at the initials at the bottom of the painting. There was no point denying it. Besides, I was proud of this painting. It was the canvas I painted on Christmas Eve. I'd thought about keeping it and making something else for the exhibition. But the truth was, I didn't want Vicious's face staring back at me every day. Every time I closed my eyes, he was there. I didn't need another reminder of my obsession with him.
Are you sure you want to sell it?
Sandy pressed the cold glass against her cheek, her eyes moving to the painting again. I nodded. Never been so sure of anything in my entire life.
He's beautiful.
All beautiful things pass on, I said. My own personal cherry blossom.
I'll buy it, then,
she said, hitching one shoulder up. My mouth dried, and I blinked away my shock.
You will?
Sure. There's something about him. Not in a model type of way, just interesting looking.
But what I really like about this is that you captured the storm in his eyes. He's smiling happily, but his eyes? They look tortured. So troubled. I love this. I bet this guy has a good story. Nah, he's an asshole.
I heard the voice behind me and twisted immediately. Vicious was standing there in one of his navy blue suits that made my heart thump and sparked a nagging ache between my thighs. Disbelief washed through me. He'd made it to my exhibition. And what on earth was he holding in his hand? It looked like some sort of a ticket. I didn't know how to react. I wanted to jump on him, to kiss him hard, to thank him for being there. But that's not who we were. Not at this point, and maybe not ever. I reminded myself that last time I'd asked him what he wanted from me, his answer was to fuck me. I needed to be cautious with my heart this time. Vicious walked over to us, ignoring Sandy, pushing his hand into my styled lavender hair, his lips ridiculously close to mine. The chatter around us stopped. I felt Brent's eyes on us, Sandy's eyes on us, everyone's eyes on us. So this is what he had planned for Thursday. He knew. He wanted to be here all along.
Ask me what I want.
Vicious murmured into my face. The public display of affection from him, not sexual, not bullying, but pure, naked affection, filled my chest with warmth. But I tried to swallow down my hope.
What do you want?
I turned my gaze to meet his, and suddenly we weren't in New York in a gallery full of people. We were in my old room, ignoring the party and the world around us, a world that we constantly disregarded when we were together.
I want you,
he said simply.
Just you. Nothing else. Only ever you.
He breathed out in pain, closing his eyes.
Fuck, Amelia. You.
I wanted to kiss him hard like in the movies, but this was reality, and I was an employee and an artist who still had to carry herself in a certain way. But I hugged him close to me and inhaled his unique scent, allowing myself to get drunk on it. I held back all the emotions that flooded me, the relief, the happiness, wariness, and love. So much love. When we finally pulled away, I looked down to his clutched hand. What's that in your hand, Vic?
This? I saw something I liked, so I bought it when I got here.
He opened his fist and showed it to me. It was a receipt for my painting. My heart stuttered. He squeezed my hand in his and smiled.
It's gonna look so fucking epic in my bedroom, don't you think? I could fuck you and stare at myself as I do it. That's some Napoleon shit right there.
It was the best night of my life. Because Vicious not only stayed the whole night, but because he allowed me to soak in the recognition I had received. He stood beside me most of the time, cradling his tumbler of whiskey, messed on his phone, and occasionally took a picture of me when I was smiling or laughing with someone. He acted like a boyfriend, but not just any boyfriend. The boyfriend Vicious was supposed to be and never was. And when the night ended and I turned around about to tell him that I wanted to take it slow,
that I couldn't give him only my body anymore, because it came as a single package with my heart and soul. He beat me to it. Vicious ushered me to a taxi, planted a soft kiss on my forehead, and slammed the cab's door shut, motioning for me to roll down the window. I did. I thought you'd try to take me home. I arched a playful eyebrow.
You thought wrong. Your pussy doesn't interest me right now. Your heart does.
Always so crude, even when he's sweet. He tapped the vehicle's roof.
Try to sleep, despite the adrenaline. You rocked this shit, Amelia. I'm proud of you. I'll pick you up for lunch tomorrow at 12. Good night.
Chapter 27. Vicious. The universe was rooting for me that week. Dean had stopped being a pussy-ass motherfucker and decided to help me out. He not only threw a party complete with dozens of people who spotted me, in the unlikely event that Joe was going to explore prosecuting me for what happened to the mansion, but he actually took the LeBlancs to get furniture and go grocery shopping. It was with mixed feelings that I'd watched his interaction with Charlene, because the fucker was charming and she actually liked him. I could see it in the way she looked at him that she wished her daughter had stayed with him. She was going to have to get used to me. Josephine was not on the premises when her house burst into flames. I'd asked a guy I knew to drive by on his Harley with a ski mask and throw a firebomb near the garage. He did. $200,000 it cost me. But the Spencer mansion was gone, wiped from the face of the earth. The scars on the blackened, muddy ground were the only proof that it had ever truly existed. The next morning, my stepmother sent me a formal text informing me that she was moving to Maui. I texted back that she should leave her inheritance where I could fucking see it because she wasn't going anywhere, hell included, with my money. She didn't reply, but the message was clear. I'd won. She'd lost. At life, at death, at everything that had mattered. It wasn't easy to get back to New York in time for the gallery showing. I had to bribe someone who flew coach to sell me his ticket. I paid double the price, but I made it to the exhibition. And when I got to the gallery, unsure of what I was going to say to her, she did all the work for me. She'd painted me. Not only did she paint me, and arguably gave me a better nose than the one I was born with, but it was also what I was doing in the painting that made me smile like a sleazeball. I was holding a joint and laughing into a non-existent camera, though my eyes were still mine, kind of sad and dark and fucking scary, and I wore a simple black t-shirt that said black and white. The background was stark, stupid pink. I was her black, and she was my pink. I bought the painting in a heartbeat, dragging her boss aside. Gay, thank fuck. He was there with his boyfriend, Roy. By that time, I noticed Amelia was standing next to my image, talking about it with a woman, and I hoped I wasn't too late to buy it myself. I wasn't. Amelia didn't know it yet, but she was going to paint another painting of herself wearing a pink shirt against a black background, and I was going to hang it next to mine. The next day, I arrived at the gallery promptly at noon. She was standing in the doorway in a blue and white sailor dress and orange pumps, waiting for me with a smile. It looked so simple, her on this spring day. Giving me what I wanted so easily. It didn't look so easy while we were in high school, but I could see now that Trent had been right the night I'd found out she was dating Dean. I dragged everyone into a lot of dark shit because I couldn't admit to myself this one simple fact. All I wanted was for her to be mine, but I kept thinking, believing, that I wasn't enough, that something so broken couldn't possibly deserve someone so whole. I maintained my pace from the coffee shop where I'd been waiting, taking my time to appreciate the fact that she was waiting for me at the other end of the block. She lost her patience and sauntered in my direction, barely containing the grin on her face. When we were inches from each other, we both stopped. I wanted to kiss her, but it wasn't time yet. So I tucked a lock of hair behind her ear and swallowed. Let's go. We took a taxi. It was spring. It was gorgeous. The only good thing about New York City, other than the fact that Amelia LeBlanc lived here, was what I was about to show her. Where are we going? She munched on her bottom lip. Ice skating, I deadpanned. Then I want to get a giant tattoo of an asshole on my forehead because it symbolizes me. She laughed that throaty laugh that made my cock twitch. I can draw something out for you, she said with a wink. I'd like that. The cab stopped on the edge of Central Park West and we hopped out. I didn't bring anything with me but my story. Nothing for a picnic, not even a fucking blanket to sit on. I hoped it was enough. Amelia flashed me a Mona Lisa smile that widened into a full beam when I grabbed her hand and led her to the blossoming cherry tree near the little bridge. The tree was in full bloom. It was especially beautiful, just like her, and she stood and watched it in silence. I'd rehearsed this moment yesterday just before I got to the gallery, tracked my steps to make sure I knew exactly where the tree was located and made sure it was actually blooming. Central Park was huge, and I didn't want to mess it up. No more messing up with this woman. She turned to face me. Cherry blossoms? I shrugged. I guess I can see what the fuss is all about. We sat under the tree. The notion of telling someone everything, even her, was crippling. The lawyer in me wanted to drag me by the collar away from this, but the lawyer in me was dead near Amelia LeBlanc. Fucking her against my office door had pretty much proven so. She looked at me expectantly before blurting out, "Listen, you don't need to explain yourself to me. You are who you are. I knew who Vicious Spencer was before I decided to work for you. Knew you'd pursue me. Knew you would ask me for things I might have a problem doing. And you were right. We weren't exclusive. As much as it hurt, you had every right to sleep with Georgia." "You think I slept with Georgia?" I cut her off incredulously, frowning. "I didn't touch her. I tried. Trust me, I did. But she wasn't you. And I know you don't expect me to give you answers, but I'm going to do it anyway. Because there's a small part of me that thinks that maybe, just maybe, you'll give me a chance afterward. But there was a bigger part that suspected she was going to call the police and hand me over. Still, I had to do this." Silence fell between us. My eyes landed on the grass as I spoke. It was easier that way. After my mom got injured in that car accident when I was a kid, everything changed. My parents' marriage was never the greatest from what I can remember, but it was after Mom became disabled when we stopped being a family. No more dinners together, no more vacations. He barely even spent time with us anymore. Drowned himself in work. When I was 9, my dad finally decided to leave my mother for Josephine. They were having an affair, but he couldn't divorce the poor, crippled wife, right? So Joe convinced him to send a man to make her go away. The man was Joe's brother, Daryl Ryler. Amelia gasped, and she took my hand in hers. I continued. I overheard my dad's conversation with Joe. Back then, she was his secretary, and because I was 9, I wasn't sure what it meant. I let it slide. Then, a few weeks later, I came home from school in the middle of the day because I was sick. Saw Daryl leaving my mom's bedroom in a hurry. She died that day, and Josephine and my dad got married a year later. The words tasted bitter in my mouth. I still hadn't gotten over the fact he hated me so fucking much that he'd left me with practically nothing. After what happened to Mom, it felt almost evil to be happy. And Daryl, he eventually became a fixture in our home. Like an old, tattered, ugly-as-hell piece of furniture you wanted to get rid of. He was a drunk, and sometimes a junkie. Cocaine was his weakness. And he was sadistic as fuck. I was young and broken, and it was easy to drag me to the library and beat the shit out of me and cut me. I had no one to complain to. They'd murdered the only person who loved me. "Jesus," I heard Amelia mutter as she sniffed loudly and clutched my hand in a death grip. Her eyes were already welling up. "This is horrible, Vic." "So am I," I thought. I thought about turning to the police and telling them about the whole thing, but by that point, I knew it was me against the world. Besides, it became personal. I knew what I was going to do. I had a plan. But as I moved toward it, I guess I became hardened. Too hard to notice everything that was beautiful and soft around me. Enter Amelia LeBlanc. I knew what was going to leave my mouth next, and I tried to convince myself that it wasn't a terrible mistake. Amelia wasn't my girlfriend. She wasn't even technically my friend. And I was going to admit something to her, knowing I was putting my balls in her hands, hoping she wouldn't squeeze them to death. There was a game to be played, and I played it well. When you and I saw each other for the first time, Daryl had already stopped showing up at my house. He was coked up again, and my dad had told Joe to take his keys away. Anyway, he hadn't abused me in a few years. I was big by then. maybe 6'2", 6'3", and a baller. He was just a frail junkie who was losing hair, but he thought he could still intimidate me. When I found you outside the library, I thought you'd heard too much. And the worst part was, when I looked at you, all I saw was Joe. You had her lips and her hair, her eyes and her posture. It made me want to hate you. Amelia wiped her silent tears with the back of her hand and nestled her head in the crook of my shoulder. I let her. I took a deep breath of the fresh air, closing my eyes. I was going to do it. After you left Todos Santos, everything got worse. We were no longer in high school, and I was no longer a king. No one to play defy with anymore, which made my frustration with the world simmer, especially toward my stepmom and her brother. I wanted to kill Ryler, to fucking end him. I showed up at his house. I didn't even have to kick the door in. He was in the backyard in his hot tub, relaxing, his eyes shut. I told her how I killed him, how I strode nonchalantly toward him, sat on the edge of his hot tub, and dropped his phone, which was on the wooden deck, into the water. The autopsy said Daryl drowned to death in a drug-induced stupor. It was an airtight story. It was also the right one. He had drowned, but I gave him the drugs to put him out. After I was done, I stilled, not even daring to inhale my next dose of oxygen. She didn't stand up and walk away. She didn't scream at me. She didn't make a sound. She just tensed next to my body and brushed her hand along my arm, prompting me to continue. I released the breath I was holding in my lungs and did just that. Then it was time to deal with Josephine and Dad. The gold digger deserved to lose what she'd schemed so hard to have. The fact that my dad got sick took care of most of it. My plan for simple. My dad worked himself to death to create a business legacy. All I wanted was to confront him before he died. Let him know I knew all along about my mom, and that I was going to get rid of what he'd built, starting with the mansion I hated.
You burned down the house, she finished gently.
I nodded, my chin digging into her temple. I felt lighter somehow. I hoped it wasn't going to bite me in the ass the next time Amelia and I went against each other, which was bound to happen because that was the way we operated. She jerked her head from my chest and stared at me, and I let her, because I had nothing to hide anymore.
You did so many horrible things to avenge your mama, she whispered.
A tear escaped her right eye. I nodded. I'd have said I was sorry, but that would have been a lie she didn't deserve hearing.
And you're telling me this because...
Because I trust you. Because I want to know if there's still a chance you can know who I am, who I really am, and still... Don't say love me, don't say love me, don't say love me. Be with me.
I want to be with you,
she confirmed without hesitation, and fuck, it just got a whole lot warmer.
I know that they damaged you, and I still want you. I don't even want to fix you. I just want you as you are. Broken, misunderstood, jerk. I want the real version, the dark version, the one who made me the saddest I've ever been in my life, but also the happiest.
Now was the time. I pressed my lips against hers, and they were warm. And they were right, and they were mine. We kissed under the cherry blossom tree until I felt our lips were seconds from cracking before she pulled away, blinking at me. I got up and offered her my hand. She took it. She fucking took it. Knowing what I'd done, she was still there. What's more, she was still strong. That was the true beauty about this girl. She never cowered. She always stood tall and thought for herself, knowing what was right and what was wrong in her universe. Always. That's what Pink said all those years ago. That we weren't above the law, but not beneath it either. There were people around us, cycling and setting up picnics, taking pictures and walking their dogs. The place was buzzing with life, but I had just finished talking to her about the death I'd caused. I knew she still had a question in mind, so I waited, allowing her to voice it.
What are you going to do about Josephine?
Her eyes jerked me, and I smiled. I'm going to punish her where it hurts. I'm going to take her money. It was pretty amazing how fast 6 months could pass. I was in no position to talk shit about Dean because he stayed true to his word, sticking to L.A. and even helping Amelia's parents settle in while I was courting their daughter. Yes, that's right, courting. I had no idea how we went from fucking in my office in every position known to man to me holding her bag while I escorted her from the subway to her shitty apartment every night, but it happened. I asked her if she wanted to move in with me, along with Rosie, back to their old apartment in Manhattan, the one I occupied now. I had more than enough space for the three of us, but after she said no, I never brought the subject up again. We were going to do things her way. I got it. Her way sucked, but I needed to start learning how to play other people's games if I ever wanted something meaningful. We didn't explicitly say out loud that we were dating, but we certainly weren't fucking, and still, we saw each other every day. It went without saying that our weekends were booked and we spent them together. Rosie tagged along more often than I would have liked, but I bit the bullet. We went to museums and to the movies. We took walks and even went to Coney Island once. Rosie brought a date along when that happened, a greasy guy named Hal, so I had a few hours to smuggle Amelia behind a building and make out with her until she had concrete burns all over her back from when I grinded against her. Rosie kept teasing me about the Hamptons, asking what kind of rich person I was if I didn't have a house there, until finally I caved and rented a place for the weekend, but not before I ran the idea past Amelia's baby sister and told her that if she was not bringing Hal along, I'd be dumping her sorry ass on the road on the way to the beach house I'd leased. The week before the beach trip, we visited the cherry blossom tree again. The flowers had long died by then, which was kind of depressing to think about, I guess. Worse, spring was almost over, and I knew I was running out of time. That night, we finally got into bed again, and it was nothing like our first times. Rosie needed the apartment in the Bronx because her boyfriend was sleeping over at theirs. A perfect opportunity for me. I asked Amelia if she wanted to sleep at my place, and she said yes. I didn't arrange a fancy candlelit dinner or get her flowers because that would have been lying, and I promised myself I wasn't going to lie to her. But I did order us some Vietnamese from that place she liked and bought some booze. She came over after work and kicked off her high heels, lemon yellow with green dots, muttering something about how she was 5 seconds from caving and pairing sneakers with dresses like the rest of the female lawyers and accountants of NYC. I grinned and poured her a glass of wine. I was already in my jeans and t-shirt. Women in suits and sneakers. The antidote to an erection. She laughed and threw one of the heels at me playfully, purposely missing me by a few feet. I cocked an eyebrow, striding over to her and handing her one of the full glasses of wine. You're aggressive lately. Must be all that sexual tension. Without giving her the option for a comeback, I turned around and started opening takeout boxes, fixing us our plates. She took a sip of the wine and I felt her eyes on my body. How are you sleeping these days, Vic? Her tone was sweet and seductive. Like a fucking baby. Thanks for asking. I'd somehow managed to snag some more planned sleep recently, mainly because I no longer had to worry about everything. Joe was my only loose end, and I was going to deal with her soon enough. Everything else was running smoothly. I slept every other night, which was huge progress. I don't know how it had happened. Maybe it was the fact that I had someone by my side now. She tilted her head slightly and stared at me almost dreamily, and I loved her for it. Shit. I did. She untangled my fingers from my glass of wine and placed it on the kitchen island as she linked her arms around my neck. And that's when I realized that all this time, all this fucking time I was chasing her, I was actually loving her. I loved her when I hated her, and I loved her when I didn't want anything to do with her. I was so crazy about her, the lines had blurred together. Feelings were mixed, emotions twisted together. I was stealing her pens and pencils when actually I was desperate for her words. All of them. Every letter and syllable. Every silly doodle. It was clear to me then, in a generic white kitchen I didn't particularly like, in a city I hated, in an apartment I was supposed to vacate in 3 weeks' time, that I was in love. A love that was worn and old, but still burning. "Ask me what I want again," I said softly, and she grinned, pressing her lips to my chest through my tea.
"What do you want?" she murmured.
Her hair smelled fantastic, like flowers and how my fucking pillow was going to smell tonight. "Nothing. I'm done wanting things. I have everything I need now. Ask me how I feel."
"How do you feel?"
"In love." I breathed hard, burying my face in her hair. "I feel in love, and it's you that I love. So fucking much." We didn't eat our dinner. Instead, I carried her to my new bed, one that Dean had never slept in, and placed her on the mattress, on her stomach, watching her heart-shaped naked ass and all that purple hair fanning her back and my pillows. I leaned forward, kissing her tattoo and dipping my hand between her legs, running a finger over her slit. She shivered in pleasure but waited motionless. I purposely waited this time, waited for it to feel right, to show her this wasn't a fling. I licked my way slowly from her neck to her tailbone where I stopped and propped her ass up by raising her knees. She was on all fours now, twisting her head behind her shoulder to see what I was doing. I stole a desperate kiss and guided her face so she was facing the headboard again.
Don't you trust me?
I'm just starting to. She laughed breathlessly and I sank my fingers into her again, feeling her grow wetter. I borrowed some of that heat and swirled it around her nub, my finger pads stroking smoothly, and felt her pussy rubbing into my hand desperately. I placed one hand on the small of her back, nailing her down.
Don't move.
You're always so bossy, she moaned, but complied. This time I didn't forget to put on a condom. Hell, this time I didn't forget anything. Slowly, I sank into her from behind while still working her clit. It felt good to be inside her again, but it felt even better to know that this time it meant something. At first, I went in slow, desperately slow, teasing her, frustrating her purposely.
Vicious,
she begged, her hair falling to the pillow as she let out a sigh.
Please.
Please what?
Please don't torture me.
I picked up speed inside her, still not giving it to her the way she wanted it. Amelia liked to be pounded. She liked it rough and angry, which is why we were so compatible in the first place.
I think you like to be tortured.
I leaned forward, whispering into her ear.
I think you always liked it. Very much.
The first wave of pleasure slammed into her and her knees and elbows gave in. She collapsed, lying on the bed now, but I still pumped into her hard, my fingers still working her clit. I was relentless, and after depriving myself of her for so long, I had good reason to be. Up, I instructed. My voice held its usual cold tone.
I don't think I can.
She sounded just about ready to pass out. I tugged her up so her back met my torso, cupping one of her bouncy breasts as I fucked her from behind, brushing her nipple with my thumb over and over, rubbing it in circles while sucking on her tattoo.
Do you know how you feel?
I growled into her neck. I was going to come any second now. I knew it, and some orgasms, you knew it was same old, but this one, it felt like a first, a once in a few years epic peak.
Good?
She asked.
That too.
I smirked into her hot, sweaty flesh, licking it to taste her again. I was riding her so hard I knew she burned everywhere, but it was for me, so I didn't care. I used one of my hands to support her while playing with her tits, and the other to grab her knee and spread her leg to the side for better access, then pounded harder. She yelled louder. Everything between us throbbed.
You feel like redemption, and do you know what that's like?
I flipped her over, but I was still at it, and she was shaking with what might have been her third orgasm.
No, tell me.
I came inside her hard, feeling my release inside her warm, tight pussy.
It's perfection, like you.
I fucked Amelia so hard my back looked like I'd fought a fucking grizzly bear by the time we were done. When we collapsed back on bed, she rolled over on top of me and whimpered.
I love you.
I know, I said. Because I did. Because who else would ever put up with my bullshit if they didn't love me?
It scares me,
she added.
Don't let it.
I promise I'll protect you from anything.
Even from myself.
An hour later, I was already dragging her out to the balcony. Hey, it was a hot day outside, almost summer. Sitting her naked ass on the dining set and pushing her legs wide with my shoulders. I ran my tongue along her slit, teasingly, hardening in my briefs again. I slid my hand between her legs and pinched her clit. It was good to feel her flesh against mine again. And at least now I knew that the vacation I had booked in the Hamptons would be a fuckfest.
People can see us,
she told me, and not for the first time. She was right, of course. We were on the 20th floor, but so was pretty much the rest of Manhattan. Fuck 'em, I said, eating her out, filling her with my tongue and fingers at the same time. She cried my name, and I loved it on her lips so much I nearly burst. Her mouth hung open for the rest of the time as I plunged into her with my tongue. After she came once more, I stood up and lowered her body so she was flat against the table and fucked her raw, the dining set dancing under her ass until we both found our releases. When we ate our cold dinner at the dining table inside, I decided I was going to use my new trait of being honest and just give it to her straight. I sold 10% of my shares in Fiscal Heights Holdings to Dean in exchange for 6 months in New York. Silverware clattered on the table and silence filled the air. I continued. That was back in January. I have 3 more weeks before I need to pack a bag and move back to Los Angeles. I'm not going to ask you for shit, because I know you have your life here and that you love your job, but I'm just letting you know. Her eyes shot up and she choked on her dim sum. They glittered with different emotions, which I was still too much of a dick to recognize, but I was fairly sure she wasn't pissed off at me this time.
3 weeks?
She repeated. I nodded, solemn. I can try and sell 10% more of my shares, but there's no way Trent and Jamie will let that happen. It'll put their asses at risk, too. She drank more wine, probably to buy herself some time. After polishing the whole glass, she winced.
Thanks for telling me.
I didn't know what I was expecting. Actually, I did. I expected her to say that her job could go fuck itself. She was moving with me. But then, why would she give up on her career just so I could chase mine? Sure. Are you going to eat that last dim sum? I pointed my chopsticks to her plate. She shook her head, suddenly looking sad. I picked it up and stuck it in my mouth, chewing so I wouldn't have to talk anymore. Good stuff.
Chapter 28. Emilia. And again, I'm so sorry. I parroted my own words for the 1,200th time, twisting my fingers together as I stood like a punished kid in Brent's office. It was all white, other than the paintings hung on each wall of the room. They were beautiful. One of a strawberry field, one of naked men wearing fancy dress shoes, one of a gun crying, and one of a cherry blossom tree. He stared at my painting and sighed, pushing his reading glasses up his nose. I'm not sure what to tell you, Millie, other than the obvious. You're making a huge mistake. I would have argued, but there was no point. He was probably right. How many girls would have left everything they knew and loved, their city, their dream job, their sister, for a guy who kicked them out when they were 18? Not many. Yet, I was that girl. I was everything illogical and reckless, everything stupid and irrational, because I was his. So I continued standing there, tapping my foot nervously. Brent got up from his seat, pushing from his white desk, and strode over to me. It was different than standing in front of Vicious when he was my boss, because now I wasn't scared, just sad. Sacrifices were like vices. You made them, gave up something good in order to get something better.
What will Rosie do?
He asked. He didn't know my sister all that much, but he'd met her a couple of times and knew our story. I shrugged. That was the most painful part, the part that made me feel like a traitor. She met a guy, Hal. She's staying here in New York, wants to enroll back in nursing school anyway. Brent gave me a look that said, see, you should stay here too, but I dismissed it by fixing my eyes on the naked men painting. I'm so sorry I disappointed you, I said, which was true. You didn't. Brent leaned into my face, sighing. I'm just hoping you're not going to disappoint you. I made my way to Vic's office right after I handed in my resignation. On the subway, I thought about the fact that I'd never resigned from so many good jobs in such a short amount of time. Ever. But I knew what I wanted, and what I wanted was to move to Los Angeles. I'd never been there, but it didn't matter. He was going there. My parents were there. L.A. was my home, and I hadn't even been there yet. I sauntered into Vicious's office, and as usual, his receptionist gave me the stink eye. Though at this point she knew better than to try and stop me from getting inside. Over the past few months, I'd walked in that door countless times, and embarrassingly produced noises she could hear perfectly while I was there.
noises that clearly gave away the idea that I was engaged in some grueling cardio activity. Vicious didn't have a treadmill in his office, so she knew exactly what we were doing. Hi, I nodded to the receptionist. Hmm, she answered back, flipping through a glossy magazine with a picture of heavily photoshopped Selena Gomez on the cover. I missed Patty. I'd only worked there 1 week, but it didn't stop me from getting attached. She was fun, even when she'd twisted my arm so I'd ask Vicious to do things for her. It took the young receptionist exactly 3 seconds to realize where I was heading, and when she finally snapped from her gossip-induced haze, she jumped from her seat and waved her arms at me. You don't want to go in there. I'd stopped knocking on Vic's door long ago, since he took me to see the cherry blossom tree, to be exact. It was as if, after that, there were no secrets between us. I arched an eyebrow and stared at her questioningly. Why? She shook her head, looking exasperated and stressed all at the same time. He's with this woman. It's been loud the last half hour. She was kidding me. What? I felt my face whitening. The receptionist pushed her hair back. She was sweating. She looked like she wasn't sure what she should do. This was serious. I don't know. I hope he's okay. Before she could finish her sentence, I twisted the door handle and breezed into his office. It was loud in there, but he wasn't the one doing the screaming. And he was with someone. The last woman I expected to see. Joe. Josephine was standing over his desk, her manicured fingernails clawing at the glass, yelling loudly, while Vicious sat perfectly still in his executive chair. His eyes tore from her to me, and he gave me a private smirk, peppered with a wink. It said, "Nice to see you, and don't get too attached to those panties, because I'm going to chew them off you in a second, all at the same time." His chin rested in his hand, and he got back to staring at Josephine, who turned around and scowled at me. "Can't you see we're in the middle of a conversation?" She jerked her head to me and seethed. I walked over to her silently and slapped her. Hard. Violence is never the answer, but it felt good when directed at the woman who orphaned the man I love. Shocked silence filled the air after the thwack of my palm before Joe brought her hand up and rubbed the pink flesh of her cheek. "I hate you," I said, staring at her through a curtain of unshed tears. "And I will protect him from you, any way I can." She made no move, too astonished to react.
"It's fine."
Vic waved her off dismissively, rising from his chair and striding in my direction. I still eyed her like she was trash I forgot to take out, and he placed a kiss on my cheek and collected my wild hair into a ponytail, releasing it over one of my shoulders.
"Emilia knows everything, and I mean every fucking single thing, so you can talk freely in front of her."
I still couldn't seem to unglue my eyes from Joe. We did look alike. Sort of, and it made me sick to my stomach. Oh, how Vicious must have felt when he saw me day in and day out, and all he could think about was the woman who was responsible for his mother's death. I hugged him, then slowly moved to her. All I did was squint at her, and she almost crumbled to pieces, still clad in her Prada dress, her high heels, and fake demure expression. "Why are you here, Josephine? Are you begging to get thrown into jail?" I asked. She blinked at me once, like she was sure I was incapable of actually talking just because I wasn't the proud owner of 1,000 overpriced designer dresses. "Emilia, I thought your name was Millie, honey. Bless your heart. And here I thought you'd be cleaning someone else's toilet right about now. You know, like your folks. Talk about ungrateful. I gave you a roof, a job, and a good education. And this is how you repay me?"
"Josephine,"
Vic warned.
"I wouldn't upset my girlfriend unless I was eager to get out of here in several pieces."
"Fine," she huffed. "I came here for negotiation, not to get ripped off." She pointed at Vicious animatedly.
"I'm not giving you everything." "You are, unless you want to get charged with murder."
He loosened his tie. I stayed rooted to the floor, too stunned to do anything. He was so calm all the time that I'd mistaken his indifference for a lack of feeling. But I was wrong. Vicious was full of feelings. He was a walking, talking ball of feelings. Just because he didn't wear his heart on his sleeve didn't mean his heart wasn't bleeding.
Baron, if you think I'm stupid, you're dead wrong. I know exactly what you did. I always thought the timing of my brother's death was odd. Just before you went to college, after you'd already gotten bigger, physically stronger.
She wheezed, blinking.
I always maintained there was something off about you. Told your dad you were a psycho.
Vicious shrugged.
This is fucking adorable. You do understand that your opinion has zero weight in court, right, Miss Delusional? What you need is a little thing called hard evidence. Got some of that?
Well, no. No.
She started, and he cut her off.
I heard you plotting the death of my mother with my father, and my body is covered in scars. Now take a moment to let that sink in.
He paused dramatically. He was mocking her, nodding his hands behind his back and taking a deep breath. He then proceeded.
You had a motive, and Daryl was no angel. Then there's the weird will my father left behind. For no reason whatsoever, and without informing me or his lawyer, he disinherits his only son. Viteri told me the new will was mysteriously found in his safe deposit box after he died, and both witnesses who signed it are dead. That has nothing to do with me. A coincidence. As for these other wild accusations, you never said a word to anyone until now. A jury will know you're lying.
She got in his face, her skin pale, her brow crusted with a thin layer of sweat.
You have no evidence against me.
But he did. He had me. I waved my hand in the air with a smile. Actually, during our senior year, Vicious and I were pen pals. School obligation. He told me everything about you and Daryl's abuse in those letters. School records show that it's true, and I even kept the letters in a shoebox. Still got 'em, I said with a shrug. My parents knew what was happening, too. Vicious turned around and stared at me, a little stunned. He wasn't expecting that. That made both of us. I'd lied for him. He fisted his hand and chuckled.
Holy Batman, Joe. That's a lot of evidence against you. I'm going to have a field day burying you alive. In fact, just watch as I dedicate my next couple of years to sitting in court watching you sweat. And I won't stop with the will. I'll have my mom's body exhumed. It's amazing what they can test for, even years after the fact. I personally know of a pharmaceutical giant that has amazing capabilities. You don't even have to be convicted of my mom's murder. I'll sue you for wrongful death.
The only audible sound was the humming of the AC and me swallowing hard. Joe, crestfallen, shaking and unbalanced, clutched her waxy cheek, hard.
You can't leave me with nothing. Give me 2 million. Not even a penny,
Vicious countered.
And I know about every single bank account and vintage vehicle my father had. You're walking away with about 2 grand and the few clothes that didn't burn up, so you better make immediate plans to go to the unemployment office in Hawaii because you'll be strapped for cash soon. Oh yeah, that's right. You've never had a job since you weaseled your way into my family's life. Guess it's time to start looking for one.
Josephine looked white, so white I thought she was going to faint. She let out a scream, a frustrated cry that echoed and bounced against the walls, running toward him and pounding her fists against his chest. He let her. Then he held her when her knees buckled, and she collapsed into something that resembled a hug. It was all so surreal. I didn't know what to make of it. I was guessing none of his employees knew how to handle it either, because I saw the curious stares through the glass wall.
I can't.
She mumbled into his chest, clutching onto his clothes, letting her makeup stain his pristine baby blue dress shirt.
I can't go back to being poor. Baron, please. Baron, I will die.
Shh. He patted her head in a way that was almost fatherly.
It's over, Joe. You had a nice ride, but you hijacked the fucking vehicle. Did you really think you would get away with it? What am I saying? Of course you did, you stupid little thing. But it's done. The war is over, and the good guys won.
You're not a good person,
she sniffed. He grinned.
My mom was.
I ended up sleeping at his place that day. I still didn't talk to him about my resignation. It seemed inappropriate to talk about anything else other than what happened with Joe. And besides, he had a lot of phone calls to make to Eli Cole, Mr. Viteri, and other people who were going to handle the mountains of paperwork involved with Joe relinquishing her claim to Baron Spencer Sr.'s estate. Vicious even made sure his stepmother was going to give back the jewelry and designer dresses she'd retrieved before the house burned down. Every single one of them. I was actually surprised he didn't alert every pawn shop on the East Coast not to deal with his stepmother. He was busy avenging. Busy being bad. And I let him. That night, we had sex like we used to, before he flew to Todos Santos. Brutal. Hungry. He was detached, but I didn't care. I knew he'd come back to me eventually. And he did. The next morning, I woke up to find a breakfast of Greek yogurt and fruit waiting for me. Vicious always ate like a rich person, which meant he wasn't big on carbs, and he liked his protein lean and his vegetables organic. Where are my eggs and bacon? I pouted at the table like the food personally offended me, but internally, I was smiling. He'd arranged a table full of coffee, orange juice, and carefully cut fruit while I was busy snoring. Vicious threw a cool glance over his shoulder from the kitchen and raised one eyebrow.
Holy shit, you stayed the night. Didn't I call you a taxi?
I grinned and held my stomach as I pretended to laugh, then sat down and dug into the yogurt. My mouth was full when I spoke.
So, I need to tell you something. Okay, but I need to tell you something first.
He turned around and walked to the table, holding his coffee cup. His jaw ticked once, and he swallowed.
I want to strike another deal with Dean. I was thinking of maybe extending my stay for another 6 months, but I wouldn't be able to give him another 10%. I would if I could, and fuck the company and my shares in it. It's not the money, but Jamie and Trent would never sign on for this shit. Maybe I can convince Dean to sell some of his shares to them.
I stopped him right there because he was talking nonsense, and even though I appreciated the gesture, I didn't want to watch him flushing his career down the toilet just so I could explore mine. I resigned, I said serenely. He raised his eyes to meet mine. There was hope and confusion in them.
What?
I resigned. I'm coming with you. Rosie is staying here with Hal. I asked her to join me, but she wants to give their relationship a try, and besides, she would never live anywhere other than New York. I told her she didn't even give LA a chance. He cut me off.
Amelia, no disrespect, but who gives a flying fuck about your sister? Rewind. You're moving with me to Los Angeles?
I got up from my chair on wobbly legs and smiled sheepishly. Surprise? He grabbed me and flung me in the air like I was a little kid, spinning me in place, his face happier than I'd ever seen it. I took a breath between kisses, knowing it was going to develop into something more, something a lot more, to tell him what my condition was. Because there was a condition, and it had to be fulfilled. One thing, I said.
Anything,
he promised. I want you to let Rosie rent back this apartment. I don't like her living in a bad neighborhood. I think she and Hal are going to move in together anyway, so they can probably afford the rent.
They won't have to afford the rent. Maybe a few $100 for legal purposes, but not the whole thing. I promise you. And she can stay here, yes, I'll make sure of it.
I nodded. So, I'm going to be an LA girl. There was a beat of silence. We both smiled.
I love you.
He grinned like the boy I was once so desperate to impress. I loved you first, I teased like the girl who knew deep down he always liked her too.
Not possible.
He kissed me hard, his tongue sliding into my mouth. Then he leaned back.
I loved you since you told me your friends called you Millie. Even then, when I caught you eavesdropping, I knew I wasn't gonna call you that, because you weren't going to be my fucking friend. You were destined to be my wife.
Epilogue. Vicious. 2 months later. This is stupid. I said, hands in my pockets, still leaning against the wall outside the birthing room. I hated Chicago. I also hated New York. Come to think of it, I pretty much hated everywhere that wasn't Los Angeles or my fiancé's pussy. Lucky for me, I lived in both places. It can take up to 2 days. Jamie blew out a breath and rubbed his eyes, pacing back and forth. Melody was in labor for 18 hours before she had Daria. Dang. Amelia snapped her head from the sketch pad on her knees and swiped her eyes along Melody's tiny body. My former lit teacher, turned my best friend's wife, was sitting next to us reading on her Kindle. Her eyes shot up from the screen. A smirk formed on her lips. Oh yeah, and I was induced. Fun times. I'm never having kids. Amelia shook her head, her mouth falling open in shock. She wore baby blue jeans, a green tank top, and her pink hair had flowers in it. I lifted an eyebrow and jutted out my lower lip. Thanks for the news. Next time, break it on national television. I didn't care, though. The last thing I wanted was to share my soon-to-be wife with someone else, and kids could be demanding. We had 10 years of acting like two idiots to catch up on. Maybe in 3, 4, or 6 years. In the immediate future, though, no fucking chance. She sent me a sly smile. We've discussed it. You hate kids. Hate is a strong word. I don't care for them. I shrugged. And fuck, I can't believe Trent is going to be a dad. Just as I said it, a doctor in green scrubs, or were they blue, passed us by in the hallway and shot me a dirty look. Guess I should be more careful about dropping the F-bomb every 2 seconds in this place. It's ridiculous, Jamie agreed. We heard footfalls and Dean appeared down the hallway, running in our direction, clutching the hand of a young woman I didn't know. I couldn't decide who was a bigger man whore, him or Trent. Although now that Trent was going to be a dad, I guessed a lot of things were going to change for him. What did I miss? Dean breathed out. Nothing, other than basic social skills. Jamie shot him a dirty look, then glared hard at the chick he brought along with him. No offense to the lady, but is this really an appropriate place to bring your date? Cut him some slack, Amelia yawned from her chair against the wall, continuing to doodle. Cherry blossoms. Her favorite. Mine too. Nobody cares other than you. My phone rang in my hand and I groaned. I have to take this. Amelia smiled warmly and introduced herself to the girl Dean had brought along. She was always nice to the chicks Dean and Trent dragged to whatever social events we all attended, even though she knew she'd never have to see them again. That was Amelia. The sweetest. The nicest. And mine. I stuck one finger in my ear to block the noise from the commotion in the hallway and leaned against a wall. Hello? Yeah, I heard Mr. Viteri say. He still wasn't a man of many words. I spoke to your financial advisor. So you're putting aside $6 million for that gallery on Venice Beach? I want to make the offer tonight, I confirmed, buying the whole complex. Under your name? Viteri's tone was cautious, borderline helpful. I shook my head, even though he couldn't see it. Amelia LeBlanc, my fiancé. I remember, Viteri gritted out, annoyed. The same fiancé you'd like to marry without a prenup. Do I need to voice my opinion about this matter again, Mr. Spencer? No. I loved her. I loved her so fucking much, there was only going to be one way out of this marriage other than death, and that was if Amelia woke up one day and decided to fuck every single guy on my phone's contact list. Even then, I might forgive her. I used to think people who didn't sign prenups, rich people who didn't plan ahead, were too stupid to have so much money in the first place. The natural selection of the upper classes. That's what I'd called it. But now I understood. I understood why they did it. They didn't want to think about the what if. They didn't want to consider failure. Because to them, it simply wasn't an option. All I knew when I got down on one knee under a cherry blossom tree on our trip to Japan was that this time, Amelia wasn't going anywhere. Ever. Unless it was with me. Accepting the fact that you loved someone was much harder than falling for that person. It took time. And courage. But when I finally took that time, found that courage, when I finally let my guard down, I discovered something spectacular. I wanted to create a world and fill it with her throaty voice and her smiles, with her laughter and peacock eyes and crazy wardrobe. She was a happiness capsule I took every day to ensure I was able to sleep, eat, and live well, and I did all those things, thanks to her. I got off the phone and strode back to where all my friends were gathered. Dean's date sat next to Amelia and gushed about her drawing. I puffed my chest out in pride. Dean elbowed me and tilted his chin to Amelia. You guys next? Kids? Fuck you, I said, like he'd suggested death and not the creation of new life. By the way, I thought about it, and I'm willing to sell you your shares back. Figured you did enough groveling to everyone you owed an apology to. How much? I asked, turning to the wall, shielding my hands as I rolled myself a blunt. This whole thing was too much. Trent becoming a father was too fucking much. I made a mental note to make sure Child Services was going to visit that baby on a monthly basis with these two as her parents. I placed the tobacco and weed inside the rolling paper, spreading it evenly with the pads of my fingers. 7.5 million plus an apology. Dean hitched one shoulder. 8 without an apology, I said. 8 with an apology just because you're an asshole who can't be bothered to do the right thing. I laughed. 7.5 with an apology, I repeated. Do you want me on my knees? Only if you suck a dick as good as your girlfriend. He waggled his brows and I punched him in the arm, hard. The fuck? He winced. I heard that, Amelia said from the chairs beside us, reassuring me in her sweet voice. He's lying. And FYI, fiancé now. She wiggled her engagement finger. Huge, fucking huge diamond. Pink for my pink, of course. I know he's lying, baby. Come with me to the roof? I asked. She nodded and got up, leaving her sketch pad behind. When the doors to the elevator closed behind us, I placed the joint in my pocket and slammed her against one of the walls, kissing her hard. She moaned into my mouth, and soon her hands were in my hair, my hands were on her waist, and we were two bodies becoming one, despite our clothes.
What do you want? She asked me.
I needed to think of something fast. Over the last couple of months, we turned the question into our little joke. Ask me, what do I want? I thought about it quickly before saying, I want it to be black.
You want what to be black?
She was panting. I shoved my hand into her jeans and rubbed her clit through her panties. We were so fucked if the elevator had cameras. Your gallery on Venice Beach, I said. She stopped kissing me, stopped clawing at my hair. She jerked her eyes up and inspected me, suspicious.
No,
she said. Yep, I responded. I never understood why galleries are always so fucking white, you know?
Vic.
Her lips trembled and her eyes glistened with tears. Happy tears. Because now I made her happy. All the fucking time.
I love you so much, sometimes I feel like it's not even real anymore, she admitted.
I knew exactly how she felt. It's real. And it's ours. I smoked weed while she danced on the roof and threw me smiles every now and again. I watched her with a smirk. Life was good. It was about to get even better soon when this woman became completely mine. And it was right. Because Dad was dead, Daryl was dead, and Joe was living in a studio apartment on the outskirts of San Diego working as a waitress doing double shifts. She never made it back to Hawaii. Sometimes she tried to message me, begging for a loan. I never answered. We spent no more than 10 minutes up on the roof before going back down to the maternity floor where we were all waiting for Trent's stripper to give birth, but no one was in the hallway. No one.
You sure we got the right floor?
Amelia looked around us, confused. It looked like the right place. Then again, the problem with hospitals was that everything looked fucking identical. We spotted her sketch pad on the chair down the hall just as a plump nurse breezed out of a room squinting at the clipboard in her hand. Friends of Vasquez and Rexroth? We both nodded.
Congratulations, a healthy baby girl. Let me show you to the room.
We practically jogged after her. The nurse knocked on a door, waited, and then Trent said, "Yeah?" and she led us inside. Amelia went in first, but I held her hand right behind her. Trent looked good, happy, fucking glowing even. He held a tiny little thing in his hands, wrapped in a white blanket with a light pink and baby blue wool hat on her head. She looked so peaceful and sweet. Valenciana was lying on her bed, speaking in Portuguese with her mother, who sat beside her. Brazilian, African-American, and German, Trent said, introducing his baby to us, and Amelia squeezed my hand. That's a pretty long name. How about we use the initials and call her Bag for short? I quirked a brow, and Trent laughed. It was hard to tell, but I thought his daughter might be as good-looking as both of her parents, which was terrible news for the rest of the male population. Her skin tone was a light brown, and her eyes were grayish, like Trent's. That's her heritage, dickbag. Trent, everybody in the room shouted in unison, and I grinned like the asshole that I was. Tisk tisk, I said, shaking my head. So what are you going to call her? He handed Amelia the baby without asking her if she wanted to hold her, but by the smile that almost split her face in two, I knew she was game. She clutched the baby tight to her chest and cooed. Then Trent looked at Valenciana and she looked at him. Something passed between them. I knew they weren't together. Even more than that, I knew this baby probably wasn't an accident. Trent was one of the richest people in his Chicago zip code, hot as fuck, and was bound to become even richer as we expanded. But none of it mattered right now because it was clear that despite everything, they were both committed to this baby and loved her a whole fucking lot more than some married parents loved their kids. Luna, they both said. Amelia was close to fainting from happiness. She smiled and cooed some more and held Luna closer, mumbling about how it was a perfect name for a perfect girl. Finally, it was Melody's turn to hold the baby, and she took her from my fiancé before the latter managed to run away with her. The room was buzzing with excitement and laughter, and I kicked back, sat next to Amelia, and smiled. This was my family. My fiancé. The Hotholes. And even the nameless chicks they brought with them. I changed my mind about babies, Amelia said through the chatter, leaning into me. Maybe not right now or in a few years, but down the road, I want it. I think I really want it. What do you say? I smirked. Amelia LeBlanc of Richmond, Virginia was asking me to put a baby in her. Then I shrugged and leaned back into her. Don't worry. I won't stop trying to impregnate you even after you get pregnant. She laughed. Deal? I asked. Deal.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Vicious. Written by LJ Shin. Performed by Savannah Peachwood and Christian Rummel. Executive producers, Susie Bright and Mike Charzik. Producer, Neil Basic. Copyright, 2016 by LJ Shin. Production copyright, 2017 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.